Thank you. I'd like to thank the organizers. So I'm going to talk about spinor orbital order. My collaborators are indicated here. Two Wei-Changs, Wei-Cheng Liu, my student, who is back there. This was his PhD thesis to a large extent. Wei-Cheng Li, who just moved to Binghamton. Frank Kruger, Zhidong Long, and John Tranquada. So I'm going to focus on mechanisms for obtaining anisotropic Fermi surfaces. In particular, distortions which look like this. So this problem comes about in the context of trying to understand the structural and the magnetic transitions in these iron pinnictide superconductors. Okay, now, as you know, there is a considerable debate in the literature, and the question focuses on who's in the driver's seat. Okay, is it orbital order or is it spin order? And the debate, the publicity battle is clearly being won by these people, so I am here to defend this side of the argument. I'm here to show that there is considerable reason to question why they're winning the publicity battle. I'm not sure I can show that I can eliminate this, but I'm here to just question this. Okay, so why do I care? This seemed like a rather small question. I don't think it's a small question, because I think it's at the heart of a bigger question, namely, what are the pinnictides? And are they, for example, like the cuprates? I think there's reason to believe that they are not, for this simple reason that there is no orbital degree of freedom if you only have one unpaired electron. There's reason to believe that they look somewhat like the manganites, because they're d6, there's orbital degeneracy. If orbital degeneracy is important, then Hund physics undoubtedly comes into play. And in this context, then, they look somewhat like the manganites. And that's going to be an overall theme, but I want to be more explicit about how this plays out. Okay, now, this subtle problem of orbital versus the spin degree of freedom can be summarized by the following. The overall group for the transition is O3 cross Z2. And it's the Z2 degree of freedom that is under debate. So in the spin camp, the Z2 comes about because you have two degenerate ground states as far as the magnetism is concerned. And you can define an order parameter, and over here, it's the degeneracy between dxz and dyz. And hence, it's the occupancy difference between the two that is the Z2 degree of freedom. And over here, you can define an order parameter for this or that state. And at high temperatures, you have fluctuations between these two. And if there's no difference between the fluctuations, there's no preference for breaking any symmetry in the xy plane. If, in fact, the fluctuations become unequal, then you can drive a structural phase transition, although these two order parameters are equal. But once the structural transition happens, that can certainly lead to an unequal occupancy in the orbitals, in the orbital occupancy, and this can give rise to a magnetic state. So this is sort of the reasoning here, that it's really the magnetic fluctuations which are driving the ultimate breaking of the symmetry in the xy plane. On the other hand, in the orbital ordering camp, it's the unequal occupancy and the fluctuations of that. So just replace fluctuations of orbital order with the order parameter over here for the spin case, and you have what's going on here. So this step is inverted. It's really the fluctuations here which are giving rise to this to the unequal occupancy. That's driving the structural phase transition, and because of that, you can sort of engineer a magnetic state. Okay. Now, can this debate be settled? So what I want to do is focus on three experiments which I think will help align you along this camp. Okay, so the first is this very nice data, the old data of Peng Sheng Dai's on the neutron scattering experiments. We're just looking at the spin excitation spectrum. And what's very interesting about this is that if you just fit this spectrum with an extended Heisenberg model, what you end up seeing is that you need a negative value of the J1 along one of the axes. You need this to be negative to get this fit of the data, and hence the magnetism seems to be frustrated. Now, why would one of them be negative? Okay, and within a simple J1, J2 model, you'd get a suppression here, and if you didn't include this one, you'd just go all the way to zero. Okay, another point is point contact spectroscopy has been done, and it shows that you have an enhancement of the zero bias signal way above the structural transition. So what is the origin of this effect? And this effect is also correlated. It matches up this enhanced region here. We have these zero bias fluctuations matches up in these torque magnetometry experiments where there's some evidence for ordering way above the structural transition. Now, they claim in the experiments that, in fact, this line is where the C4 symmetry is broken. I don't know if that is actually true, but it's certainly consistent with some sort of maybe local C4 symmetry being broken up here, and I will talk about what is the origin of this and why these two might in fact be correlated. Okay, the other experiment I'm going to focus on is the one done by Bob Bergineau and John Tranquada and their colleagues, that there is a transition from incommensurability if you look at the spin wave spectrum, there are these incommensurate peaks way above any ordering temperature, and you're going from incommensurate to commensurate. Now, if you had a pure spin model, you would expect that since you only have one energy scale, that you would just be shifting where the spectral weight is, not changing the position of the peaks. And hence, they concluded that there has to be some other degree of freedom other than just a pure spin type effect accounting for this transition from moving the peaks from incommensurate positions to commensurate. In fact, they concluded that there had to be some type of orbital order, and that's why we started working with John on this. Okay. So let's just go through orbital ordering, and I want to go through each of these experiments to sort of go through why I think orbital ordering is the thing to be thinking about. So orbital ordering is a fairly old thing. What you're trying to do is account for the breaking of the symmetry in the XY plane. And you have these three orbitals to play with in this particular crystal field. These are the ones which are relevant. These are lie way below. So the only two of these which can actually break the symmetry in the XY plane are the DXZ and the DYZ. So at some high temperature, you have equal occupancy of on each of these sites of DXZ and DYZ. Below, one particular kind of orbital is selected. Okay, and you can see that if you just simply compute this Coulomb integral, that as a result of a distortion, you will see that there is a minimization of this integral if, in fact, you pick this configuration over this. I'm sorry, if you pick one of these configurations over this, because that will minimize the effect of Coulomb energy. Okay, so what this means then is that underlying the structural transition, if you formulate it in terms of an unequal occupancy of DXZ or DYZ, is an effective Ising type of model, where MI represents DYZ or DXZ. Okay. Now, this changing of the symmetry from C4 to C2, I just want to focus on for a minute. Now, if you just had a Fermi surface undergoing a Pomeranchuk instability, that would be changing from a continuous symmetry. You would be lowering the continuous symmetry to you would be going from a spherical symmetry to an L equals to distortion, and in this case you would have a Goldstone boson. Okay, now the case that is being considered is not this. Okay, it is a lowering of a some discrete symmetry to another discrete symmetry. So the kind of, quote, pneumatic that you're getting here is fundamentally different than the one that you would get from just a Pomeranchuk instability in some Fermi surface, which doesn't have any underlying lattice. Okay, so I think that distinction has to be made, and hence this is why this is typically called an Ising pneumatic. Okay, but not every example of this transition actually corresponds to a pneumatic transition. The manganites, for example, is certainly one case. Okay, now if you have a structural transition, here's how this can lead to the collinear antiferromagnetic state. Okay, so if you have this, the exchange interaction here will certainly be smaller than the one here, as a result of the fact that these orbitals are facing one another. And because of that, these would be antiferromagnetically coupled, and these would be antiferromagnetically coupled, and the other ones would be ferromagnetically coupled. So one can define then a series of interactions along the x and y directions as a function of the z2 variables for the dxz and dyz occupancies. And if in fact these now are the same, you know, the system has in fact ordered, you would find then that these matrix elements look something like this, and hence you can drive the stripe antiferromagnetic transition based on first obtaining an unequal occupancy in dxz and dyz. So in this approach, it's the magnetism that is a consequence of the orbital ordering. Okay, now, is there any evidence for orbital ordering? Well, the first evidence is was a long time ago, the polarized ARPIS experiments, in which you see an unequal occupancy in dxz and these, you simply see just one, you see a Fermi surface, which is certainly not spherical. And because of how they've done this experiment, these are actually these dxz domains. Okay, now more recently, on iron selenide, there is a clear evidence for orbital ordering. What you see is a splitting between the xz orbital indicated here, and this is the yz orbital. And this energy splitting is 50 MeV. And this is happening right at the structural transition. Now, this material is interesting for many reasons. I think it's probably the most interesting experimental development here at this conference, because it doesn't have any long-range magnetic order. So if one is arguing for a spin-driven origin for the structural transition, this would certainly give you pause to reflect that possibly that might not be the case. Okay, now, what about this experimental puzzle of the fact that you need one of the exchange interactions to be negative? Is there any way of getting that within an orbitally ordered picture? Okay, so here's the basic model that we've written down. It's just the standard J1, J2, J2 model. You have some itinerant electrons, but you have a coupling between these. And this coupling is now the Hund coupling. Now, the Hund coupling is ferromagnetic. And hence, if it's ferromagnetic, it's going to favor ferroorbital ordering, which means it's going to favor minimizing the kinetic energy along this direction. So this will be the easy axis of this system. And you can go and calculate the effect of these itinerant electrons on the spin wave spectrum, and you obtain something that looks like this. And note this peak is now a minimum if you don't have JH. As you crank up JH, this can increase as and hence can be somewhat similar to what is going on in the experiments. And so you simply ask the question, if I were to just plot this with some extended Heisenberg type of model, what are the parameters that would go into calculating the spin wave spectrum? Now, because we have this Hund coupling, this would effectively generate an effective ferromagnetic interaction along one of the axes. And that is what is seen here. If, as we crank up the value of JH, one of these things is becoming negative. So we naturally have a mechanism then, without invoking frustrated magnetism, for the reason why one of these JHs is, why one of these, the exchange interactions along one of these axes is, has a different sign than the other. Okay, so in this localized plus extended electrons plus the Hund coupling, we have orbital ordering. It's ferroorbital order, and this can give rise to an explanation for the unfrustrated magnetism. Now you can also repeat this calculation in the paramagnetic state, and what you see is a persistence of this spin excitation spectrum to high energies. This is what is happening in the low temperature state that we calculated before. And we can also see, just look at the imaginary value of chi, and what we see is that this peak is becoming incredibly damped as you go to high temperatures. So we're saying that there is an enhancement of Landau damping as you go to high temperatures. And this has to do with the particle-hole continuum, the interaction with that. So this is a prediction. I don't know if it will be seen, but this is certainly one of the consequences of this model. Okay, now what about this experiment, this zero bias conductance, where we have this excess peak, this excess weight at zero energy? Can we try to understand that? And this is obtaining in a fairly large range of these materials. Okay, so that there is an excess, that there's an excess conductance at zero bias can be explained if point contact spectroscopy is really measuring the density of states. And it was pointed out by Eduardo and Michael Lawler some time ago that in the standard pneumatic transition, there is an excess bias conductance. I mean, there is an excess density of states at zero energy, plus this non-Fermi liquid omega to the 2/3 part, which would certainly explain this behavior. So what I want to show is, in fact, Well, okay, so let me just, okay, so So let me just look at the, what I want to do is look at orbital ordering at the quantum critical point and show that you do in fact get this sort of behavior. Okay, so if you have two orbitals, dyz and dxz, they look like this in the xy plane. If you form a Fermi surface and these things hybridize, the Fermi surface here will be dyz, and the one here will be dxz. So you already have an isotropic Fermi surface. Now, if you transform the interactions, the on-site interactions that you get here, into this hybridized basis, it will certainly be that the interactions are anisotropic. Okay, and this will lead to a distortion of the Fermi surface. Okay, so, and this distortion then is just a particular mechanism by which you can get a type of pneumatic order. Okay, so what we did is we simply did two sorts of calculations on the original model with the Hund coupling that we had before, multidimensional bosonization, to see if we have what is typically accepted as the mode which is present when you have this pneumatic transition, namely this heavily overdamped mode. And so we just did a patch type calculation, and here's what we found, that in fact the dispersion does scale like this. So we do have this z equals 3 mode at the quantum critical point, as Eduardo and Michael Lawler had found earlier. And if we look at the imaginary value of the self-energy, it in fact scales as something greater than 1, and as through the transition. And actually, we want something.
You see magnetic order without structural distortion, without breaking the trigonal symmetry, which is.